Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And a very good morning to you from Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Welcome to the show this morning, this third day of November 2005. Lots on tap as usual, and stay tuned for some great deep thinking stuff today as we tackle another day of current events and issues on the Christian Worldview program. Let's check the weather if you're on the way to work. We'll get you see how you're doing.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 39 degrees. Downtown is 39 degrees also. Anderson 37, Clemson 43. Today sunny, highs in the lower 70s and southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour.
Okay, and the Fox News headlines this morning, we have Libby having his day in court. Former White House aide Scooter Libby is set to be arraigned on charges of perjury and obstruction of justice today as one of the big scandals of the Bush administration starts to unravel and go down, and we'll see if it goes even deeper than that. We also have six service members and 20 Iraqis are killed in attacks and in a crash in Iraq, so the killing and mayhem and death and destruction continues to go on in that country. I'm going to pause there. Yesterday I was talking with a pastor about this very issue, about the war in Iraq and so forth, and I was concerned and raising a concern that he probably hadn't thought about before. I said, because his normal practice is to identify servicemen that are fighting, especially have been overseas in Iraq. Have them stand up at the beginning of the service and then everybody applauds them. He recognizes them and he applauds them. And to me, I said, you're going to turn off a lot of people who are thinking people because why? Iraqi war is an aggressive war. We're fighting as the aggressor against people that did nothing to us as Americans. We are actually harming other people, killing people, causing mayhem in a country. Why? Well, we have no reason to be there for our own national defense purposes. Everything that was said and told to us by George Bush was a lie, as far as the weapons of mass destruction and all of that. I've heard some gainsaying from a few neocon publications, but there is no evidence that there was ever any need for us to be there. There's no link with Al-Qaeda. There's no weapons of mass destruction there. I mean, it's just a bunch of garbage we've been fed. So how can we applaud people who have gone over to Iraq and acted like thugs and murderers? Effectively, that's what you're doing. If you're not fighting a war of self-defense, then you're going and murdering somebody else. You're going and aggressing somebody else. How can we applaud in the church people who do that? Well, his response to me was, well, Jesus, he talked to centurions and a soldier came to him and he just told him not to defraud anybody and to be content with his wages. And I didn't have a chance to respond because we were talking about so many other deep issues at that time, but if it had been a key point of the discussion, I would have pointed out to that pastor, and sometime again, I'm sure I will. First of all, it was he, of course, the soldier that went to John the Baptist, not to Jesus. But second of all, nowhere in the scriptures are soldiers singled out in the church for applause. Neither Jesus nor John actually applauded soldiers for their work in a war somewhere. It doesn't exist. There was a supposed Pax Romana at the time, and although there's a lot of spurious notions tied to that, there were no foreign wars going on. So the soldiers that came to Christ, or came to John the Baptist, and that Christ visited, the centurions, were not involved with aggressive warfare. They were an occupying force, and they were serving in the military and defensive purposes, I suppose, but they were not an occupying aggressive force. So it was, he does never commend them for being soldiers at all, not even publicly or privately. He doesn't say to them, the soldier came to John the Baptist and what do I do? He wants to repent and be saved. He doesn't tell them to stop being soldiers, that's true, but neither does he applaud him saying, wow, you got a great profession, thanks for your hard work. No, doesn't happen that way. It's not biblical. And this pastor had made that error, and probably will continue to make the error, because his view was that public policy is not important, this is a waste of time, I'm worried about the kingdom work. He doesn't see how public policy issues are affecting his own congregation, his own thinking, and how he could be practicing sin and leading others into sin, or allowing them to continue in sin without being checked, because he doesn't recognize the importance of public policy. So I thought I'd bring that up to you this morning, let you think a little more deeply about that, to chew on it a little bit, how people should be treated in the church who are soldiers. Certainly there's no reason to applaud them. No reason at all. Scripture doesn't show that. Unless you're talking about men who are fighting in defense of their country, which is being assailed by an aggressor. Those soldiers, I think you can make a case for applauding. Now, they weren't applauded in the scriptures either, because there was no, again, war of self-defense going on ever. And but I think that you can bless and praise those who do good. I think that principle is not only found in the Proverbs, but elsewhere, even in the Pauline epistles. We see that people are praised for doing good things. And this would be one of them. This would be one if it were a war of self-defense. But it's not. Now we have a case of preachers praising people, applauding people in the congregation for engaging in aggressive warfare. If it is aggressive warfare, there's no difference between applauding them than asking everybody who's ever murdered somebody in their congregation to stand up. Anybody who's ever had an abortion. Anyone who's ever, you know, robbed somebody. Stand up! We're going to give you applause for your work as a looter, robber, thug, plunderer, murderer, rapist, whatever else. Can't do it. I mean, nobody would think of doing such a thing. But the problem is, in the church today, people begin to think that because there is an aggressive war going on and it's conducted under the guise of legality or color of law by the United States state, that therefore it's okay, that all bets are off, that we don't have to consider it like other acts of thuggery, it's different. And therefore it's okay to move on and move ahead. So, and go ahead and praise these people. This is a misunderstanding of the Bible, it's a misunderstanding of public policy, and it's a grave error that this pastor and others, many others, have fallen into. And I bring that issue up, by the way, in the book, my recent book, and it's coming out. We just got the proofreaders are going through it now, and people making comments, edited comments on the different issues. We find other issues too, of nationalism and problems with idolatry and other sins being carried out in the church. And one is I raise in the new book again, the whole issue of having flags in the church. I was just listening to a fellow from League of the South talking about this. He had a great expose of why you don't need to have flags in the church, sanctuary, any flag, even the Confederate battle flag, none. No flags. Why is that? Well, because our faith is not linked to the state or even to a limited government. Our worship of God has nothing to do with worship or, you know, even being applauding of the state. No. The state is something entirely different than the church and is not to be mixed. Children shouldn't go to the church sanctuary and see a flag up front and say, wow, Daddy, there's the American flag, or there's the Confederate battle flag, or the state of South Carolina's flag, and confuse in their minds that their salvation has something to do, or their Christianity is somehow tied in with the current state of the current state or the current system of limited government, if we had had one. You can't do that. It's not right, because Jesus Christ and His church stands or falls regardless. No, it doesn't fall. It just stands regardless of what the state does or is. And the state, beyond that, has normally been our grave enemy, not our friend. We should not have any links to the state in our church sanctuaries or elsewhere. You think about that for a little while. Think about your own willingness to succumb to nationalism and to exalt something in your Christian worldview that should never be exalted. Yesterday I had a group call me, and I frequently, well, not real frequently, but every now and then I get a call from a new group that says, look, we heard you on Free Market News. or, you know, we saw your ad in the Times Examiner, or your article in the Times Examiner. We saw something on your website, which my website, policyofliberty.net, gets 240,000 hits per month and 15,000 new visitors, or unique visitors every month. Well, the question is, you know, becomes, well, Dr. Coben, you know, you're a little bit unusual on your stance here, and we would like to, you know, talk with you about it, because, like the gal said yesterday, we're concerned about faith-based initiatives. Do you like them? And I said, no. She says, well, you know, tell us why. We'd like to interview about you about this. We need to find out other people who have the same kind of idea. And I said, well, there not only are there strings attached with any kind of money that would come through that would cause regulation to come upon the church, which I don't want, but the whole idea of the state using the church as some sort of directed charity, an arm of the state, so to speak, to carry out good works or to encourage good works is simply wrong. You don't use public money for charity in the first place. And then to make the state link up with the church is an absolute abomination. The church needs to be completely separate from the state. And I don't want to hear any of the pragmatic arguments. Well, wouldn't it be nice if we got some of that loot back? No, there is no getting loot back. If the money's stolen from you, it's stolen. It's gone. It's done. You don't try to go and steal it from other people to so-called get it back. You don't get anything back. There is no George Bush and the Congress and whoever else do not have little piles of cash sitting out, you know, back in a shed or underneath in the basement of the White House or the Congress. It just isn't there, folks. There is no pile of cash waiting to be utilized that you can get back. They spend it, and they spend more than they have. That's why they have $8 trillion in debt. That's what's going on up there, folks. Don't be deceived. Don't be misled. There is no getting back through faith-based initiatives. The church has no business being linked to the state in any way. There should be no nexus. Well, there's your deep thinking way to start the morning. Boy, if you're tuning in late today, you missed a lot. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 244-9904. That's 864-244-9904. You are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
A patriot must always be ready to defend his country against his government. Edward Abbey.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence.
Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you joined us this morning. Are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have the sense to make your own decisions? Try voting libertarian for a change. Yes, why do we promote the Libertarian Party here? Well, because they support us primarily, but I'll tell you what, the Libertarian Party stands for the things that you need to stand for. I know it's hard to call yourself a Christian and a libertarian in the modern arena. People think you're nuts and you got to be crazy, and how can you align yourself with those kind of people? Well, I'll tell you what, those kind of people were the kind of people that founded this country. That's right, libertarians, not Republicans or Democrats, were the people who founded this country. Now, I know there's an aberrant group. I know there's a hybrid group called the Constitution Party, which is basically libertarian at core, but adds a few appendages on of virtue here and there. We're also present, so I don't want to exclude the Constitution Party, but it's constitutionalists, let's broaden this, it's constitutionalists and libertarians who started this country, and that's why, and they are those founders, those principles, those ideas are congruent with Christianity, and that's why we support the Libertarian Party here. So let's start that ad again, and think about it. Are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have the sense to make your own decisions? The power of positive change is in your hands when you vote for libertarians. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find they are regular people like you, concerned about the state of our republic and willing to act on that concern. The Greenville Business Meeting is at 6:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at the library on Augusta Road, north of I-85, one block before reaching Malden Road. Visitors are welcome. The Spartanburg Monthly Meeting is on the first Thursday of the month at 6:30 p.m. in the private dining room at the Beacon Drive-In. You know, folks, that is tonight. If you're in Spartanburg and you want to come check out the Libertarian Party in Spartanburg, tonight's the night to do it at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In. To talk politics, join us for the Libertarian Underground at 8 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of the month. It's at Cafe Underground just off of Main Street downtown. We would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. Okay, here's some other news stories, some other things happening around the world. This came up actually from the upstate Libertarian Party chairman, Doug Taylor. He sent this blurb to me. We'll have to find out more about this. San Francisco's Department of Human Services wants to fire a child welfare supervisor accused of downloading and passing around gay S&M, what's that, sadomasochism, I don't even know what that is, S&M porn pics, a Hotshots that starred a psychiatrist from the city's foster care program. As far as the department is concerned, however, the doctor didn't do anything that violated the city's work rules by appearing on an S&M website. He's not facing any disciplinary action. Well, isn't that sweet and smart? What do we expect from the state, folks? And this is why you have to protect your own kids, because you have nutcases out there and freaks, literally, who will go and abuse children, especially if you happen to be beleaguered as to live near San Francisco and have these kinds of people coming around who are supporting the, you know, sodomites and perversion, apparently far more than sodomy. So we appreciate Doug Taylor passing that out as we get an insight into what some of these government workers at DSS are doing, or whatever these other human services kind of people are out there doing. Okay, what else have we got? Walter Williams points out, and our research staff, illustrious research staff, sent up a story about the ammunition for poverty pimps. Walter Reed Williams, of course, we like him. My former professor and somebody I'm proud to have studied under. He says, in the wake of Hurricane Katrina's destruction of New Orleans, President Bush gave America's poverty pimps and race hustlers new ammunition. The president's espousing such a vision not only supplies ammunition to poverty pimps and race hustlers, it focuses attention away from the true connection between race and poverty. And you know what William says it is? It says that he says that people don't get married who are black. They don't stay at work. They don't keep the same job. That's one reason they have a problem. But there's even more than that. In fact, he says according to the Census Bureau's 2000 current population survey, there is one segment of the black population that suffers only a 9.9% poverty rate, and only 13.7 of its under 5-year-olds are poor. There's another segment that suffers 39% poverty rate, and 58.1% of its under 5 years are poor. Among whites, one segment suffers a 6% poverty rate, and only 9% under its 5-year-olds are poor. The other segment suffers 26% poverty rate, and 52% of its under 5-year-olds are poor. What do you think distinguishes the high and low poverty populations among blacks? Would you buy an explanation that it's because white people practice discrimination against one segment of the black population and not the other, or one segment had a history of slavery and the other not? You'd have to be a lunatic to buy such an explanation. The only distinction between both black and white populations is marriage, he said. Lower poverty in married couple families. Now, isn't that interesting? So that if you stay married, if you get married, stay married, have a nuclear family and a traditional lifestyle, the chance of you falling into poverty is far lower. The reason for that, there's several reasons for that economically. There was a study, in fact, Walter explained this to us when we were in school. There was a study done many years ago to find out, you know, who gets paid the most or who is the most valuable to an employer or who actually deserves the most as a worker. And, you know, was it single women, single men, married women, married men? And they came out and said that the most highly compensated people actually were single women. And then the least highly compensated were single men, and that the next two categories were married men and then married women. Those married men picked up when a man gets married, he takes a huge boost. Apparently, why? Why does he? He becomes more reliable. A man who's married is one who has a family to provide for, and his wife is very helpful, especially in the past when the statistics were turned out. The woman was at home, doing part-time work perhaps, but still supporting him and making sure that, you know, he was, you know, he had his food taken care of, his clothing taken care of, the household taken care of, and the man was far more settled. And so it made sense that was a more reliable person to pay that person. Now, married women, the young single women, could earn more, but they were not long-term reliable because of the issues of babies. They'd start in the workplace, and the economists found that they get paid a lot because they were very reliable while they're dutiful, and they would be very useful, helpful for the business. But the employer always had to worry, well, one day she's going to get married and go off and want to have a baby and drop out of the labor force. So it made her far less reliable over the long run. Young men tended to just go around who aren't married and, you know, do whatever. And skip from place to place, maybe even the least of all the reliable people. And then married women were down and making less on average. Why? Because they were women who would go into the workforce and go out, usually work part-time, usually work jobs where they didn't earn as much as men who had a full-fledged career. So there are economic reasons for disparities, by the way, between the ways one person earns and another person earns. And economists they don't buy this stuff about stereotypes or brushing everything with the, you know, one big broad brush and claiming that it's some meta reason why women are discriminated against or why blacks are. It's all nonsense. And here Bush just gives, as Walter points out, ammunition to these poverty pimps to carry on their craft, when in reality, if blacks wanted to get out of poverty, they would just go to school, finish school, stay married, instead of trying to have children by many, many different men. All right, the Worldviews Project announces the publication of Worldviews, Christian Theism versus Modern Materialism. Stephen Yates, our friend here, is the author of this book. You can order a copy by sending your check for $20.99 plus $2.50 shipping and handling to the Worldviews Project, care of Dr. Yates at 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216 in Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. You get a $2 discount if you mention that you are a member of the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party. Send your order to the Worldviews Project, care of Dr. Yates, 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216 in Greenville, 29615. And you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
I am for doing good to the poor, but I differ in the opinions of the means. I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading them or driving them out of it. Benjamin Franklin.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, sensible radio that knows that open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. It's time for your next shock treatment.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, this third day of November 2005, and let's have a look at the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 42 degrees, downtown 43, Anderson 42 degrees, Clemson 45. Today, sunny, highs in the lower 70s, and southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And here's a quote by Thomas Sowell. The first lesson of economics is scarcity. There is never enough of anything to satisfy all those who want it. The first lesson of politics is to disregard the first lesson of economics.
Yes, indeed. Well, Fox News is reporting today that light from earliest stars has been detected. This is the Associated Press actually showing this, and it came out on the Fox News wire. Astronomers may have detected the dawn's early light from around the dawn of the universe, that is. Researchers from NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland believe they have captured traces of radiation from long-extinguished stars that were born during the universe's infancy. The research represents the first tangible, but not conclusive, evidence that these earliest stars, which were thought to have produced the raw materials from which future stars, including our sun, were created. Okay, so these stars that just appeared out of nothing, get this, folks, provided the raw materials, that is the atoms and the chemicals and molecules or whatever, to make what we've got today. Okay, the Big Bang, the explosion believed to have created the universe, is thought to have occurred 13.7 billion years ago. About 100 million years later, hydrogen atoms began to merge and ignite, creating brightly burning stars. They began to merge and unite and ignite, creating brightly burning stars. Just what these stars were wasn't clear. where they, none of this is clear, folks. You guys weren't there. You weren't there. You didn't see it. You can't replicate it. It's not science. I'm sorry. It's faith. Well, people ask, you know, well, Dr. Coben, how can you believe that the world was created in 6 literal days? Well, because if you believe in an almighty, all-powerful, omnipotent God, it can happen in 6 days. In fact, it can happen in 6 seconds. It doesn't need to have any time attached to it at all. Well, how can there be time when there's no sun created? Look, the first day the sun wasn't even created. There, you know, and time is a function of us spinning around the sun. Well, God can, he knows what the sun, what the time would be if there were a sun, and it's pretty easy for him to emulate it. It's not that big of a deal, folks, when you've got an all-powerful, almighty, omnipotent, all-knowing God to have creation happen in 6 days. What takes more faith is for me to believe, like this story said, that there was just some random bang at some time of matter. The matter doesn't tell you where the matter came from, just some big block of matter just sitting there in the universe, just blew up one day. And we don't even know where the thing came from. There's no indication of how the universe was created. That's one big flaw in the evolutionary faith, this whole idea. I actually call it evolutionary faith. It's, whether it's Darwinian or otherwise, I don't know what the polite term in science is for it. But to have that thing blow up and then all of a sudden have these gases go around and somehow merge together and ignite and make new stars and create order out of that chaos of an explosion, that's what they want me to believe? I'll tell you what, my faith's a lot more reasonable as far as I'm concerned in the Christian worldview than the faith of other people who have to believe this kind of silly story. That's ridiculous. Now, I know they don't believe in God, most of these people. Or if they do, their faith is a liberal faith. They're not very weak, or it's not very strong, I should say. It's very weak on theology, and it's more of a convenience and a pragmatism and a tradition for people that are Christians, supposed Christians who believe this story. But I tell you what, there's no way that science can call this, or scientists can call this science. Science requires what? Observation, replication, the production of a hypothesis, more testing. And if it passes muster, advancement to a theory or exaltation to a theory, and if the theory becomes incontrovertible over so long, we transform it into a law. That's the scientific method and the process, replication, observation. You cannot go back and observe the beginnings 13 billion years ago or 50 billion years ago or even, you know, half a billion years ago. You can't even imagine it. You can't even observe it for sure, but you can't even imagine it. And this is all a bunch of nonsense and fiction, silly stuff as far as I'm concerned. It's not the Christian worldview to hold this kind of position. It's not science. I had an argument with my mother, of all people, because she would be very much along the left line of things. If you imagine any position I take, just imagine she takes the opposite and you have my mother. She was telling me that she was scorning the 6-day literal creation idea and applauding this wonderful, obvious truth of science. But she has to know, and although she doesn't want to hear it full well, that there's no way that this is science. This Big Bang stuff. I'm not saying the 6-day creation stuff is science either, folks. It's faith. There's no way that I can go back as a scientist and observe and replicate and make a theory out of something, or a law. And the law of gravity is the law of gravity because, as the theory goes, if you drop something, it falls to the ground, has been replicated so many times ad nauseum that people don't doubt anymore that it would ever possibly be contradicted. So it's a law. There is no law of the Big Bang. There's not even a theory of the Big Bang. It's not even a hypothesis. There hasn't been an initial observation. It is a guess, a wild guess at how the world or the universe began. That's all it is. Now, other problems with this include the whole Darwinian theme. And with the Darwinian theme, then you have the emergence of life on the Earth after this supposed bang or whatever it is spins off this stuff. These gases merge and unite and ignite and start up stars, and then, you know, then all of a sudden life appears out of these chemicals. Just somehow the light rays hit the chemicals and the chemical becomes alive. This is another huge piece of faith here, folks. I don't know why I should believe that if I throw chemicals into a pond or something and then hit them with sunlight, they should become alive. Now, we're talking about dead matter. We're talking about rocks. Think rocks and Clorox. Fill your bathtub full of Clorox and rocks. or water, or, you know, any number of other things. Could be, fingernail polish remover. Throw it in there. Throw a little gasoline in, too. Just mix it all up, and then put some light on it. Sunlight, direct sunlight. And let's see life come out of that. Something alive. I don't care if it's an amoeba, some kind of a microorganism comes alive. Give me a break. I mean, some people must think, Christians are really stupid and gullible because of their faith. But I'll tell you what, you know who sounds really stupid and gullible are people who believe this kind of story. This is ridiculous. Chemicals don't become alive when you put them under the sunlight. And, you don't have the right mix of chemicals. Give me a break. I don't care what mix you've got. Dead chemicals do not become alive. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to buy into that nonsense. You can't prove it. You can't replicate it. If you replicate it, let me know, and I'll be happy to change my view. But you know what? I'm sure a lot of people have been out trying to. In fact, I read some stories years ago about them trying to replicate the beginning and origin of life in the world by, doing something to chemicals. It just doesn't happen, folks. This is a lie from Satan. It's against the Christian worldview. It's not what we hold. Bizarre nonsense. And then I know it goes on further from that, where they have more so-called evidence, where we can show the evolution of the species after one becomes alive and goes into these different mutations and so forth. But my mother, she just, thought it was just preposterous, and we could believe the world was created in 6 days. And I just told her, Mom, it's preposterous that you could believe all this business about origins having no God in the picture. What a bunch of bizarre, crazy things to believe. Well, here you have Fox News, as we said, supporting this theory by promoting, reporting this business about the light from the earliest stars being detected and Big Bang, blah blah blah, nonsense, just a bunch of garbage. There's nothing else that way to describe it. If you're holding to a Christian worldview, this stuff is nothing short of garbage, nonsense. Now, I hope some scientist will call up, and you're going to say, you're talking way outside of your field, you're Dr. Coben, you're not a natural scientist. Well, you're right. You can call up and say that, and the criticism will be valid. I'm not a natural scientist. But you know what? I did study science. I have a lot of education. I know what the scientific method is. And I know that what you guys do to so-called prove the Big Bang Theory, or prove the origins of the universe, or even the origins of life on the Earth, it ain't science, James. Sorry, it ain't science. How's that for good language from the South? There is no way that this qualifies as science, what you're doing. So I don't need to have a PhD in chemistry or some other field in the natural sciences to be able to determine that. It just isn't. It just isn't the case. Not going to pull the wool over my eyes. I may not have the PhD in biology, but I ain't going to be fooled by someone who does just because they do. All right, so there's enough for our creation moment, and it's probably the extent of what I know regarding the whole issue. Other people could come on and talk about it further. We'd be happy to have callers do that, and when Greg Ferrier's here tomorrow morning, maybe we'll bring it up again since he knows a lot about this issue. Let's switch to one other story here. Starbucks, another drug-related incident by Paul Proctor. This is Covenant News. Covenant News, just skipping down through the article, he says, I knew I could never drink Starbucks again. Why? As I handed it over, I realized the danger in giving caffeine to a nervous and desperate man, but it was too late, and so seeing for the first time my purpose in life, I warned him of perils of consuming large quantities of that wicked drug, explaining how hanging out on street corners night after night, giving over one's hard-earned cash to throw down anything Starbucks would sell me, had not only ruined my life and robbed me of my livelihood, but had also rotted my teeth. And that smell, oh, that smell. So the next time you feel the urge to approach the counter of desire under that big green sign, remember me and just say no. That's right. Just say no. All the tongue-in-cheek aside, it was reported by the Baptist Press back in August that Starbucks began a controversial program called The Way I See It, where a collection of thoughts, opinions, and expressions provided by notable figures started appearing on the sides of their disposable coffee cups. One quotation in particular, BP decided, number 43 was written by Armistead Maupin, a well-known homosexual author and activist. It read, my only regret about being gay is that I repressed it for so long. I surrendered my youth to the people I feared when I could have been out there loving someone. Don't make that mistake yourself. Life's too expletive short. Oh, isn't that sweet? So Starbucks, there we know about something more about Starbucks. It's not good. Now, if they'd just tackled this little zinger after Proverbs 3:16, things would really get percolating. The Lord hath made all things for himself, yea, even the wicked for the day of evil. That's what God says in Proverbs 16:4. Wonder if Starbucks is willing to put that on the side of the coffee cup. Well, I don't drink coffee. Sorry that other people do. They have to waste their money on that and need their drugs. But if you do, it doesn't bother me. Go ahead and drink it all you want to. It's your money. And don't go to Starbucks. Anybody who puts homosexual activist quotes on the side of their cups doesn't deserve our patronage. We need to just avoid that and go buy our coffee elsewhere, I think, unless they start putting Proverbs 16:4 on the side of the cup. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings. The inherent blessing of socialism is the equal sharing of misery. Winston Churchill.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Just looking at some of the other things going on Fox News. In France, the seventh night of riots. And I don't know if I can pronounce this right. Colnay-sous-Bois, France. France's government faced mounting pressure Thursday as suburban unrest spread, with youth setting fire to a car dealership and public buses in battles with riot police who reportedly came under gunfire. The youth rampaged for a seventh straight night, undeterred by the presence of armed riot police. Acts ranging from clashing with police to torching vehicles were reported in at least 10 Paris region towns. The riots have highlighted the division between France's big cities and the poor suburbs, and frustration simmering in housing projects to the north and the northeast of Paris, heavily populated by North African and Muslim immigrants and their French-born children who struggle with high unemployment, crime, and poverty. So they've actually been shooting at the cops, it says here a little later on. Right now the French people, I guess, are letting their government know what they think. So I guess ultimately can't really complain about that now, can we? They don't listen otherwise, I suppose you just start to resort to violence. Is that wrong? Well, the Americans did it. Were we wrong for doing it? I was recounting the whole issue of the GASPE, which this GASPEE, it's a revenue cutter headed by Lieutenant Duddingston, which I talk about in one of our Liberty Minutes. And, you know, this is 1772, and the people are, there's unrest in the colonies. They're upset about taxation without representation, about King George not giving them the protection that they deserve and so forth for what they're getting, what they're paying for, him just abusing the colony's wealth. The colonies, of course, are one of the wealthiest places in the world at the time. And they're not happy with King George behaving the way that he is. So what do? You know, this Duddingston guy is out riding around his boat trying to collect some taxes. He's a ruthless tax collector. And so Adam Whipple and his men run the ship ashore. They run this guy's ship ashore. Off all the people, take all the people off, and burn it to the ground, and then take off. They burn the thing down. It's equivalent of going to an IRS office today somewhere and just taking the people out and torching the building. That's what they did. And it's not too different than what's going on in France in some ways, or France. So, are they bad people? Well, of course, if you're going to call for law and order, blah, 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 yeah, they're bad. If you're like the Canadian Mountie perspective, perhaps, but you know, if we're going to condemn those people in France, we might also have to condemn our own founding fathers. And some people are willing to do that. I'm not. I think there comes a time when the state just doesn't listen anymore. It's a tyrannical, nasty state. And one of the only things you can do is show by force of arms your resistance to the state. I don't know if these people are in France or France are justified or not, but I'm just raising a theoretical point. Something to think about. Hopefully. Something you'll think about. Okay, here are a couple other things going on. I noticed that our research staff has been careful to follow the Alito story a little bit, this Sam Alito fellow. And this came out of Covenant News. This may not be a surprise. We're hoping for the best out of this guy, Sam Alito, but it turns out there might be some reason for us to doubt him. Judge Alito is besmirched with the blood of babies. He approved killing children by abortion in 3 federal cases. The word abortion appears in 22 decisions in which Judge Alito participated in his 15 years on the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit in Philadelphia. According to searches of legal databases, Judge Alito voted in support of the abortion rights side of the argument in 3 cases. In 1997, he joined a decision applying the Supreme Court's 1973 decision in Roe v. Wade, which established a constitutional right to abortion, to uphold a New Jersey law that let parents sue on behalf of deceased children but not deceased unborn children. In 2000, he joined a decision applying Stenberg v. Carhart, another 2000 decision that struck down Nebraska law that banned a procedure and his critics called partial birth abortion, to a similar New Jersey law. In 1995, he cast a deciding vote in a 2-1 decision striking down parts of a Pennsylvania law that restricted abortion. The law, the Pennsylvania Abortion Control Act, included a provision that required a doctor's certification in cases in which a publicly funded abortion was being performed because the woman's life was said to be in danger. Well, I knew it deep down. You couldn't get anything good out of George W. Bush. I knew it. I wasn't going to say it because I wanted to be able to say this, you know, hey, as one of our producers says, every blind hog finds an acorn once in a while. Maybe George Bush had actually done something right here and supported a strict constitutionalist and someone who's going to uphold liberty in the land. And if this is true, which I'm assuming it is true from Covenant News, we have just another suitor on our hands. Somebody who appears to be conservative but really isn't conservative in this constitutional, strict constitutional interpretive sense. Sounds like he's voting in 3 different cases, 1995, the worst one, and then 1997 and 2000. He's voting pro-death. He's voting in favor, in some way favoring abortion, which is terrible. So, okay, thanks for sending that up to us. We'll be following the story on this Alito guy. Should have never even thought that George Bush would have put somebody up there who was good. And now turns out we're not going to get somebody that's good. Boy, that's upsetting. What a way to start your morning, huh, to get upset by something like that. It's terrible what's going on. The idea, you know, my wife just got done with her little ultrasound last week, and she can see some features on the baby. They know it's a boy now, or they have a pretty good idea that it is. You know, this baby's, what, 4 months into gestation, has all his fingers, toes, heartbeat, brain waves. These people out there are promoting the idea that you can stick inside the uterus a vacuum tube that has razor sharp edge and suck until it rips into shreds that baby. And when you see that, it really annoys you to think that these liberal types, this is an evil thing. And libertarians who fall into this are not promoting a libertarian ideal, by the way. They're also culpable of this evil. That's why I consistently call myself a pro-life libertarian. But the idea of shredding a human being apart, it's in the womb, just because you haven't seen him yet, because he's not been born yet, is revolting and repulsive. It is the most egregious kind and hideous kind or act of murder imaginable. Baby is moving around in there. It sucks its thumb. It rolls over. I mean, it does what babies do. Well, he doesn't behave like a MIT graduate in physics. So what? He's not fully developed yet. Neither is a one-year-old or a one-day-old or a three-year-old. Human beings go through development. That's how it works, folks. You start out from at conception, from when God creates you as, you know, a couple cells, and you expand into a teenager. Some people might say that's degeneration, not development. But anyway, really it is development. You get larger. You become more sophisticated. Your skills and your fine motor skills develop. Your ability to conceive in the abstract develops. And the whole process of development from age zero in the womb all the way up to, 15 to 18 years old is a constant growth. It's people changing. It's becoming what becoming an adult human being is all about. The stage of development a person is in has no bearing on whether or not they're a human being, obviously, because it's nobody claims, not even abortion rights people complaining that the fetus is a fish or something or a monkey. It's a human being. But there's no way you can justly single out any category of human being based on developmental characteristics and say that person no longer has a right to life. We're going to take it away. Government grants this person the right to life or takes it away, and we decide to take it away. It's just foul, and it's repulsive when you watch or think about how these children in the womb are torn apart limb by limb, chopped up, literally chopped into pieces by a suction cup or a suction tube, and out spits all the different parts, the head, the arms, the middle of the body, legs or the feet, all of it comes out in different little pieces. That's what they do when they chop up somebody, obviously. Disgusting. It's you say, oh, that's graphic and gross. Well, what do you want me to say? That's what people do. 1.5 million children, unborn children, are murdered in this country every year. 1.5 million. There's been approximately 50 million children murdered since 1973 in America. That is just absolutely appalling. That's one reason we support Columbia Christians for Life. They're down in Columbia, 803-765-0916. If you can help them with a donation, please do send Steve a check, even a small amount. There are only 3 abortuaries in South Carolina, one in Columbia, one here in Greenville on Grove Road, and another one down in Charleston. And that's better than most states. Most states have far greater numbers of killing centers, where they massacre people and slaughter off young children like this. But Columbia Christians for Life works the whole state. They work to assail and go against those who want to deprive people of life. Oh, but Dr. Coben, don't you realize that the mother has a choice? It's her body. You know what? I don't make human reproduction, folks. The way human reproduction works is, guess what? The woman's body is used to produce a child. And, you know, if you have an argument with that, go talk to the Creator, not me. The fact that it's in your body, that a human being is in your body, is irrelevant. If there is an innocent human life there, you have a duty to preserve it. You don't just get to slaughter him off and kill him. Just disgusting. I hope you'll support Columbia Christians for Life. They're a great organization, worthy of support, doing a great work there. We need to go out and start picketing this Grove Road institution up here too. Folks who hold the Christian worldview, be active. The Times Examiner is the independent conservative voice of the Palmetto State. If you're tired of reading liberal columnists, the Times Examiner features outstanding true conservative and pro-life libertarian columnists. The Times Examiner supports home and Christian schooling, limited government, free markets, private property rights, gun ownership, Christian values, and our great Southern heritage, as well as the pro-life stance, by the way. You can pick up a copy of the Times Examiner at newsstands around Greenville, South Carolina, or at their offices located at 44 Pine Knoll Drive. A full-year subscription to the Times Examiner is only $25 in-state and $27 out-of-state. You can call 864-268-0576 to get your subscription started. That's 864-268-0576. To place an ad in the Times Examiner, call David. Ask for him specifically at 864-859-6817. That's 864-859-6817. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We've reached the bottom of the hour break, and we will be back after the Bill of Rights in just a few minutes.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to Homeschooler Friendly TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Exciting show today. Lots of stuff going on, and we've been talking about some great topics, including should we applaud people who are in the military in aggressive wars in Iraq and churches, have them stand up and be recognized. We've been talking about and bashing the evolutionary ideas about origins, this great faith people have. And recently, we've been ganging up and beating up on people who deserve to be beat up and drug out and thrown out to the gallows area, people who are involved with abortion, and how this Samuel Alito guy, the Supreme Court justice, has been in favor of abortion in three cases. Sad. George Bush didn't let us down. We knew exactly what he would do, and we were right, apparently. Looking bad for him now. But before we go on to that, we'll have a caller on the line in a minute, too, but we want to check the weather before we get too far along here.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 42 degrees. Downtown, 43 degrees. Anderson, 42. Clemson, 45. Today, sunny. Highs in the lower 70s and southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And here's a quote by Mark Twain. Always do right. This will surprise some people and astonish the rest.
Okay, good. Well, we welcome you back once again to the program. And we have Greg on the line, Greg Ferrier, who will be joining us in the studio tomorrow. He was listening in this morning and wanted to chime in on a few topics. Welcome, Greg.
Well, at least on the topic of abortion and the history thereof. By the way, good morning.
Good morning.
Back in the early 70s when Roe v. Wade became legal, I remember the first day. And I was working in the hospital that long ago. And before Roe v. Wade was legal, every now and then we would get these little girls would come in there. They were usually, 15, 16 or something like that, and they would be pregnant. And they would come in, and you'd see it on the chart, it would be therapeutic abortion. Before they were really showing. And I guess mommy and daddy were embarrassed, and they put them in there for a day or so, and they were gone. And they used to call it a therapeutic abortion or some disguise name from time to time. And this would go on. They'd just a few of them would straggle in, one every month or so. And of course, that was just the ones that I might have heard of. But when Roe v. Wade became legal, the very next day, they were setting up some of the extra rooms in the hospital, and they had people in there that, they were just packing the place, two or three of them just lined up on stretchers in rooms. And we had a husband and wife team. They were OBGYN people. The Cocosiellos is what their names was. Anyway, he was the guy. He was the, as they say, he was the mainmost one. His wife used to say, well, I didn't want to do this, but Alex wants to do it because there was good money in it. And they were evidently making big money on all this. And one of the things that I wanted to bring forth was a lot of the nurses, they knew it was coming. And a lot of the nurses were told, you don't have to participate in this if you don't want to. But after it got going, the situation got to where the nurses were repulsed by this and didn't want to do it. Well, then the pressure got on them. If you like your job, you're going to have to do this. And what actually began to happen
Greg, what repulsed the nurses? Seeing the blood and the feet and the...
I'm getting to that right
now.
Okay,
all right.
What they would do, they give them a saline solution or however they began to induce it back then, whatever was common. Sometime during the day, a little while later, they'd go into the bathroom there, and they'd have the baby in the toilet and leave it there just like they had defecated or something. And they go back to bed and they say, well, they push the button, the nurse comes in, finds this baby floating in the toilet. Now, is that repulsive enough?
That is just gruesome.
And wherever it might have landed or wherever she might have gotten to. And the nurses, some of them got really upset. And they weren't used to this. Now nowadays, it's like a profession. It's like going to the butcher shop and carving up the chicken. But for some people, but the thing that used to bother the nurses, they'd have to fish this baby, however big it might have been, out of the toilet, and the women would be saying, "Oh, can I see it? Or would you baptize it for me?" Well, I was thinking, you know, this thing's already been baptized by immersion.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a rather hideous thing. People didn't really understand what they did. Or if they did understand, it was just like, I guess if I baptize it, I guess it'll go to heaven. If indeed it had the soul to go to heaven.
That is just gruesome.
Yeah.
Terrible. Terrible.
Yeah. I mean, this was routine, and it really upset the nurses. Worked later in the day after all this really went on, but I didn't see a whole lot of this. But I'd see the reports, and once in a while I have this guy's patience. But it used to. We had to work around this guy. We didn't like him.
Yeah.
And some doctors refused to work with him. They just wouldn't. Even the Jewish doctors, or one or two of them, say, Alex, I'm not your guy. I'm not going to do this.
You have to be a hardened criminal kind of person within your character to day in and day out live and look at the murder of unborn children like this, whether it's the saline solution and the baby coming out all burned, mm-hmm. or just chopping them up into little pieces, or especially with the late-term partial birth abortions where they actually plunge the scissors into the skull of the baby as it's coming out and mm-hmm. suck out the brains with a vacuum and then deliver the carcass. That you've got to be some kind of at least a level of detestable, but deplorable hideousness that makes you almost and perhaps even subhuman.
Well, doesn't Paul and I guess others talk about how people just they harden their hearts and stiffen their neck and they just won't look upon this and. But I would think that all along their consciences must scream at them.
You would
then
think
again,
so.
On the other hand, the hardening of the heart. The heart is deceitful above all things. Who can know it?
Desperately wicked.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Well, and their consciences are seared, Greg. They don't. After a while, they must. I mean, after mm-hmm. you do so many thousands of things, you have to not be able to see it anymore.
Mm-hmm. And then they complain that somebody gets mad enough to pop one of them off. Somebody shot at me, or look at all the shots you've taken at people.
That's right, and the thing is, we don't advocate shooting doctors, abortion, so-called abortion doctors, but we can understand why it would be done. There's no justification, just for the record, in case people are listening and what are you saying now? What we're saying now is...
Don't say that.
Yeah, if you are an eyewitness to any crime, you have the right, not the obligation, but you have the right to intervene on the behalf of the victim, if you are the eyewitness. So if you are in the abortion room watching the victim being killed by the doctor, then you have to have, theoretically, logically, morally, biblically, the right to be able to step in defense and deter the person from killing the other one. That's true. Doesn't mean you have to shoot him in the head. This mm-hmm. means you can deter. Going on hearsay, it's lawlessness if you just say, well, I heard this person's doing abortion procedures, and therefore I'm going to scope him out in front of his house or his work and just with a hunting rifle pick him off. You've just committed murder. You do not have the right to be a vigilante and go out there and do that. But having said that, we can understand how people will get so angry after seeing the butchery that's done and the unwillingness of the state, the evil state, to go ahead and prosecute these people, why they would take the law into their own hands.
Yeah, that is... having worked in the hospital from time to time... I found a doctor one time. There was a woman had a broken neck, and the doctor tried to kill her.
Hmm.
Of course, I operated the machines that ventilated them, that breathed for them, and I one time found the machine was all fouled up. They turned the oxygen down, they turned the rate down. He didn't know how to work it, but he just kind of read the labels on the dials there, and I came in to routinely check my machine. And I said, wow, look at this, and so I turned it around. I told the nurse, and the nurse says, well, they want her to die.
Wow.
Wait a minute. Now, I said, I don't know how wise it was. I said, if he does that again, I said, you can tell him I'm going to blow the whistle on him. Well, all that got brushed under the table, and everything else got you know, cleaned up and sterilized, so to speak. I forget all the details that followed, but they didn't look on me with favor when that happened. They found another way to kill her. She eventually died.
Oh.
But, I mean, here, people look upon life. They've got no, you know, they were just going to, you know, knock her off.
Well, materialist worldview. I'll tell you what, Greg, we've come up to a break time here. If you're welcome to hold on during the break, but otherwise, we'll just see you here tomorrow morning, all right?
I think that'll work better. Gotta go.
Okay, talk to you soon, Greg. Thanks for the call. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
That we are here to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And just a couple quick announcements that we've missed to give earlier. One is we need volunteers at the Tyranny Response Network. You can help out by donating an hour or two a week or even an hour or two a month to do various things like substituting for the producer here at the Christian Worldview Show, or perhaps even doing something more with signals or radio signals or computer work. If you can help out, go to the website, tyrannyresponse.com, and scroll down there and find the contact tab and send an email to somebody. You can also call Chuck at 271-6761 if you can give us a hand. Another thing to check out on the tyrannyresponse.com website is the Sacred Cow Slaughterhouse, which should be going on today or next week at least with Rip and Richie. And check out the times that'll be occurring, or stay tuned to the Tyranny Response Network and you'll be able to hear that. We also have the South Carolina Fundamental Rights Petition, which is located under the Related Media tab. If you go to tyrannyresponse.com and hit the Related Media tab, scroll down towards the bottom, sign the petition. It takes 30 seconds to do, to save your private property and tell South Carolina legislators we believe that the right to life, liberty, and property as well are all protected because they are not granted by the state but are antecedent to it. They existed before it, and they can't be taking those rights away from us. And then finally, under the events tab on tyrannyresponse.com, at the bottom you'll find our monthly calendar. I'm not sure if Rip and Richie's updated it yet, but he will get the November calendar up there shortly. And tonight there's the Liberty of Plenty meeting up at Spartanburg at 6:30 p.m. You'll find that at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In. Don't miss it if you can make it. Hope you can. And secondly, on Saturday, we have the Carolina Patriots meeting here in Greenville on Woodruff Road across from the Greenville Mall at the Prime Sirloin Restaurant. Starts at 12:30 for lunch, and 1 to 3 p.m. is the meeting. I hope you can make it to that as well. As always, keep tyrannyresponse.com on the radar screen of things to check out. Also, check out policyofliberty.net, where you're going to find all my latest articles and books and many other wonderful links, quotations, and so forth. Check them out frequently, folks, and you'll be glad that you did. We want to come back and talk about Starbucks a minute. I didn't know this about Starbucks, but our research staff has informed me wisely about how evil the institution has become. I don't drink coffee at any rate, so I never was tempted to even go into one, like some of you are, but don't go back. Here's a story on WorldNet Daily by Megan Kleppinger. Starbucks, a habit easily broken. And it's been 2 weeks since my last Starbucks coffee, she says. Admittedly, I'm one of those who don't drink, think twice about dropping $4 for a cup of coffee that costs less than 50 cents to make. I'm a self-proclaimed coffee house junkie and need that wonderful yuppie intellectual atmosphere and freshly brewed aroma as much as the caffeine. And then she goes on and talks about her moving to D.C. and starting getting involved with the coffee house movement or whatever that might be. And then, skipping down through the article, she says, the alert described the annual gay pride events in which are scheduled in San Diego each year. San Diego's annual pride events include dangerous circuit parties, a parade with sexual content and sponsors along the route, including one advertising anal lubricants, a festival with sexually oriented venues. And that's pretty disturbing, she says, but then you find out who's actually behind and sponsoring this thing. One of the nation's top experts, Robert Knight, just down the hall from me, less than 30 minutes of research revealed the following. Robert Knight told me that about 10 years ago, Starbucks started sponsoring these types of events, but backed off when conservatives started putting on the pressure. He explained that it is apparent that they are slowly working their way back into the gay movement. Starbucks is listed on the Planned Parenthood website under this introduction. The following companies are all generously matched employee donations to Planned Parenthood Federation of America. If your employer is on this list, then you can make a gift as much as twice as far. So they're sponsoring gay pride events as well as Planned Parenthood. Starbucks has a corporate policy of supporting the homosexual agenda by sponsoring pride events all over the country. This is disgusting. Pro-abortion and pro-gay pride. Folks, you need to never go again to Starbucks if you drink coffee. Go somewhere else. Boycott it. Don't even have anything to do with it. It's repulsive. How can you go to a place that just openly supports abortion and homosexuality? Disgusting. Anyway, I mean, I know it's a free market. Yeah, they can do what they want. I'm not trying to say the government has to step in and shut them down. I'm just saying that you as a consumer don't need to go there. Go buy your coffee elsewhere. Forget about Starbucks. Disgusting. Okay, Marvin Olasky and fighting malaria. This is a good one to talk about. I'm going to skip down through part of this article because we talked about DDT a lot before, but he's going to bring up some good quotations here out of this article this week that we can build off of for a good conversation. The curious part is that the lifespan of the mosquito is also 2 weeks, so in the cool areas, mosquitoes typically die just before they become infectious. But in Africa, they bite first, die later. The entomology, the study of insects, explains why Africa is hit harder by malaria than, say, India. It takes 2 human bites in a row, or one for the mosquito to ingest the parasite, the other 2 weeks later to infect another person. The United States has been contributing about $200 million per year to Africa's war on malaria. Four months ago, President Bush promised an additional $1.2 billion over 5 years in U.S. anti-malaria funding. But last week, a coalition of 100 doctors, scientists, and activists said that anti-malaria funds up to now have been misspent. Were we expecting? One of our researchers says, have you been expecting anything different? No, we haven't. Anyway, DDT was banned in 1972 in the United States because of supposed environmental effects, which all turned out to be lies. Were not any environmental effects, and the DDT eliminated very inexpensively, virtually eliminated malaria all over the world until the nutcases and the environmental movement moved us out of using DDT because they wanted to reduce human population. Author physician Michael Crichton described the results of the DDT ban this way: it has killed more people than Hitler, and maybe even more than Mao, Stalin, and Pol Pot. Who knows? Well, probably, I don't know if you combine them all, but it would make it. But still, it's not having DDT there has killed many people, and the leftist extremists love it. They want to reduce human population, so they are glad to see people dying off. It's awful. That's because trying to stop every human stinging mosquito is a dead man's game. The way they'll find a way in. And during the 3 decades since DDT disappeared from the disease-fighting weapon rack, we've learned that insecticide does not thin birds' eggshells dangerously or cause cancer among humans. Infants nursing when there's been a heavy DDT spraying may gain weight a little more slowly than others, but that's a lot better than dying from malaria. And so Marvin Olasky points out these very good facts for us to remember this morning. Environmentalism is a fraud. The whole environmental movement is a fraud. And it's a fraud that's premised upon a Darwinian, anti-Christian worldview that does not understand that there is a God who rules and knows all things, and believes that human beings are their own undoing, that the world will be destroyed by the overpopulation of the earth and a lot of other myths. We need to reject that whole perspective. All right, let's move on to something else here. We only got 5 minutes left in our show. The beginning of the end of internet free speech, says one of our contributors. There's a bill that had lost by winning too few votes. The House defeats a bill on political blogs. One political expression should not exempt a campaign finance law. The House decided Wednesday, as lawmakers warned that the internet has opened up a new loophole for uncontrolled spending on elections. The House voted 225 to 182 for a bill that would have excluded blogs, emails, and other internet communications from regulation by the FEC. That was 47 votes short of the two-thirds majority needed under a procedure that limited debate time and allowed no amendments. The vote effect clears up the way for the FEC to move ahead with court-mandated rulemaking to govern political speech and campaign spending on the internet. All right, so we have more intervention now coming from the state. We don't want any intervention from the state, period, in general. But here's an example where we definitely don't want it, is having to do with the internet. Now, I know there's bad things on the internet. There's pornography, and there's other things that are vile and whatnot. Okay, so what? You don't have to look at it. And even though it's there, you can buy a filter like Wise Choice, which is what we use in our home. Wise Choice, it's $5 a month, and it screens all that stuff out, because there's too much good information on the internet to want to have government regulate it and therefore take away the good that we can get off of it. All right, and let's see, our final story for the day. We got just a couple minutes left here, don't we? Let's see, we've got a couple choices. Let's go with the Brian Morton story sent by LibertarianChristians.org, Nationalism and Anti-Americanism. This is written by Anthony Gregory. We do like him. He says, even the most radical libertarian staunchly opposed to the state that terrorizes his own country and rains murder upon foreigners in his name finds some discomfort in the rabid anti-Americanism that unfortunately plagues element of the extreme left. Now, let us be clear about this. Not just any leftist qualifies as anti-American. To hate the U.S. government's rapacious foreign policy is not anti-American. To condemn the acts of terror conducted by the government in the so-called war on terror is not anti-American either. Tony Beam, take notice. There are, however, people on the left who are genuinely prone to this unfortunate disposition, and although they tend to portray themselves as anti-war, in their rare case, it is a fact their country that they despise. The very few extremists who thought that the victims of 9/11 deserved what they got were voicing anti-Americanism. Ward Churchill stood as a person of this rare breed of malcontents when he compared the innocent businessmen who died in World War Trade Center to little Eichmanns. Okay, so he's pointing out here that the real threats to Americanism are not the critics of the war in Iraq, and they're not. We're critics of wars in the war in Iraq. We're not anti-American. We're very pro-American in the sense of the principles of the founders and having liberty. The people who are anti-American are those who actually want to destroy Americans, who want to destroy other people, period. The environmental wacko crowd or the gainsaying leftists who are into population control. These folks are the ones who are truly anti-American, and this guy that made the comment especially exemplifies them. Anyway, he says, in closing, There is indeed no principal difference between the nationalist views of America's most belligerent hawks and the vitriolic hatred of the most spiteful anti-Americans. The only practical difference is that the two collectivist dispositions, the allegedly pro-American nationalism, has more political and cultural influence in our country, whereas the mindless anti-Americanism of the worst elements on the left has nearly no such influence at all, and it is marginalized in the mass media and even academia. So for all intents and purposes, while warmongering nationalism and anti-Americanism are cut from the same cloth, the former is the present much at present in the present much more a threat to America's freedom and most wholesome traditions. Indeed, we agree with that. Good comments this morning from Mr. Anthony Gregory. We appreciate Brian Morton, Libertarian Christians, which is there's a link to their site on tyrannyresponse.com, by the way. Appreciate them sending all that good information to us every day. And you've been listening once again to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you've joined us today. Look forward to another rousing show tomorrow as the Tyranny Response unit tries to fly the plane here and has Greg Ferrier in the studio to talk about some deep thinking issues. Until then, God bless you.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.